Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Lumpen Kulturati podcast with me, Carl Javier. Today, we're talking about the Lego movie, and my guests are Gabby Lee and Francisquina, who've been on the show before talking about other things. But I think the one time that you guys appeared on the show together, it was when you burst into the room and said inappropriate things.
What? Yeah. Which is his tendency, to be fair. It is a classic Francisquina movie.
Like the Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Where he enters, does something inappropriate, and leaves.
Yeah, but I'm sure. So hard to recover from this.
The Kool-Aid Man. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but today, usually we talk about older things, or we've been talking about things that are ongoing, but the three of us were lucky enough to go to the advanced screening of the Lego movie, and I think we got a lot of very good impressions of it. If you haven't seen it yet and you're wondering whether you should, this is not the podcast to listen to, because you should totally watch this movie. This is just one of the most fun things that, well, what do you guys think?
Yeah.
What? Oh. Well, you know, it's I was worried about the movie because I thought that it would be, you know, one of those commercial grab, money grab things.
Yeah, yeah.
And having seen other Lego movies, I wasn't really keen on it. But you know, the trailer was interesting.
Everything is awesome.
Okay, so there you go.
There you go.
You know, I was really, really surprised how well it was. How well done it was.
Yeah, so really definitely something that you should see. And then when you see it, you come back to the podcast and you listen, because we've decided to just be really spoilerific on this
one.
Sorry.
It's such a fun thing to watch.
No, and also because I've seen a lot of the Lego movies on YouTube. And
Hold on. Yeah, we got cut off there a bit.
Sorry.
Student walk in.
Sorry.
Like the Kool-Aid man.
One of the perks of, you know, recording this in a university is that
the random studentry. But yeah, you were saying.
Yeah, sorry. So I have seen a number of like the homemade Lego films on YouTube, especially, and also there was a Marvel series that actually happened with Marvel Entertainment promoting their minifigs.
I love the Captain America, the ultra-violent Captain America with a shotgun going through Nazis, Lego Nazis.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. And have you seen the one with Loki?
No.
Yeah, the one with Loki, that's the latest one. They had Loki as
It must be said that they're not official Lego.
No, they're not. They're not. But, Marvel is at least one of those properties that, you know, let you do these kinds of things. But anyway, so yeah, so when we first saw the trailer, when Francis and I first saw the trailer, I wanted to watch it. He didn't. It also has to be said that I like movies that are shiny and happy and has a really catchy pop soundtrack.
Yeah, we don't get along with that, the pop soundtrack thing in general.
Yeah, so.
But I do think, like, for example, for this movie, it's because we keep talking about the things we've seen and the things we already know and the things that we expect. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is that it does provide everything that we're expecting. Mm-hmm. I mean, whenever I walk into an animated film, I think about, oh, it's going to have the protagonist who's going to realize that he's a unique person and everybody is special and all of this really crappy, like, messaging that gets embedded into these things, and same thing with Francis. You walk into one of these things and it's a Lego movie and you think, oh god, they're just gonna try to sell me toys, right? And the pop song soundtrack, I think one of the things that works here is that they get all of the things that you expect, but they're providing it in a different way.
Yep.
I think it's a masterstroke that they got Mark Mothersbaugh to do the songs.
Yep.
If you're not familiar with the name, you're probably familiar with Wes Anderson's films. Most of those Mark Mothersbaugh has worked on. And I think that it's just that song is very indicative of the approach that they used in this film.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, and also simply because, like, if you look at the, and I guess that's where we're gonna jump in, the whole pop sensibility of the animated movie, because I'm a fan of that. He isn't. I'm a big fan of the whole,
film format.
Yeah, I am a big fan of that.
And let's just say the Hollywood animated film format.
Yeah. I've seen most of the animated films that have come out.
I've
seen most of them too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but like I approach it in the whole, I want to see it because it's fun.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And so that's my take on it.
I've become inured to it. I just think like I don't really expect anything anymore.
Yeah. But for me, the highlight of this particular film, at the very least, is that it takes, like what you mentioned, the whole sensibility that we come to expect from a product like an animated film.
Yeah.
And then it, to a certain extent, it elevates it.
True.
Forces us to think about the format itself. And it forces us to think about how these things come together. Because it is a movie that assumes you've seen a animated film. So you know how it goes. And it assumes that you know the characters that they use.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. True. There's a lot of pop culture referencing that. Also, referencing things outside of the Lego movie, but current popular trends, but also the characters that they're using.
Yeah, I think more than anything, it's not really about the animated movies more than it's about Hollywood blockbusters.
Yeah.
Like the trope of the movie is very Hollywood fantasy sci-fi, that you know you need the one.
Yep.
There's this quest narrative, and we can go back to Campbell, but you know, more than anything, it's more recently used in Hollywood. So and the idea that you know this narrative is indicative of the American psyche, where everyone is special, and like inverting that trope. Yeah. And saying that, you know, no, you're all ordinary, but then in that's being okay. Ordinary, it's okay, and that's when you discover you're special.
Yeah.
It's the hero's journey, right? But they're very clearly pronounced in this film, and they're very aware that they're playing with it in some very
ways. You know, there's the character of Vitruvius, played by Morgan Freeman.
Vitruvius is the wizard at the beginning.
Wizard, he's the wizard.
He's essentially Gandalf, but then Gandalf is also there.
Yeah, and Dumbledore is there.
I love that they're there.
So you know, it's he is the prototypical wizard. In the story.
I love how it starts with the prophecy, but the prophecy is very badly written. It's made on the fly, and it gives you a feeling of what this film is going to be like. Yeah. One, it's fully aware of the tropes that it's playing with, and it's not taking itself too seriously, which is great.
And it also allows you, and again, it goes back to, you know, going back to the hero's journey. You know, it follows the hero's journey, but instead of the hero just going home and being celebrated, he goes home and then he becomes ordinary again. And that is how it ends.
Right, and we've got another guest. Hold on. Right, and we're back, and Gabby's getting a lot of guests, so where were we? We were talking about
The hero's journey. And because in your prototypical hero's journey, the hero is celebrated at the end, or he dies. So it's whichever one happens. Here, because our hero is extremely ordinary, you know, when he gets back, it's not, yay, we won. Mm-hmm. Although he gets the girl, but it is assumed that he goes back to being ordinary.
No. Yeah, but especially in his ordinariness or something.
Diba? So, I think that's a really, like, interesting message in the sense that, and of course, it's assumed that the audience will be mostly children. Yeah. I mean, this is a family movie, and it's marketed as such, and it's built as such. Yeah. And when we watched it, During the advanced screening, there was a significant number of children who...
And people who were willing to take toys from children.
And people
who were... It was very funny at the screening that we went to. They were giving away freebies, and there were adults who were actively competing and pushing children out of the way
so that they could get
the prizes.
You failed to mention the drunk costume players.
Oh yeah, there were also cosplayers at the event because
a dude dressed as Superman.
Yeah, and
dressed as Batman.
Yeah,
and they were drunk.
Yeah, they were drunk off their ass. Yeah,
I don't know how to feel about that, but sure.
Yeah.
Going back to this thing, what I love about it is when I saw the trailer and it's like, it's this special, and I kind of wanted to throw up a little because it's like, oh no, it's another The One or the special.
Yeah.
But then it was Chris Pratt. And you had all of these and you had all of these jokes built around it, and you have that
the double-decker couch,
and when he presents his case and all of the other specials or like all of the other builders or something,
the master builders are
watching him, and it's just such a failure.
And they're like, and "What so is this?" Fun. And they all get away. And they're like, "No."
It's willing to make its protagonist not as wonderful or not as amazing as a lot of these things do. Because most of the time when you watch something like this, it's usually the protagonist has something special about them, but they haven't unlocked it, or they don't know it yet, or they refuse to accept, and then it becomes this embrace. But the great thing about our main character here, I'm blanking on the name.
Emmett.
Which is such a plain...
Yeah, his name is Emmett. And then, he is even... We're spoiling this thing, right?
Yeah.
So, because there is a sequence at the last third of the movie where it becomes real life.
We'll talk about that. But, yeah.
But just to segue a bit, when one of the characters picks him up and says... And so, there are two characters talking, a father and a son. And then the son says, "Don't get him, he's the hero."
Yeah.
And then the dad says, "He's just an ordinary construction worker."
Yeah.
With all the other ordinary construction workers.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great like dichotomy that sets up essentially that character.
Yeah. I read one of these interviews, and it was talking about how there not only does it have a lot of ordinary characters, but it also top loads us with those master builder really cool special characters.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that it can't work if everybody is a master builder.
Yeah.
Which is it's a very odd message.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not everyone can be really brilliant and amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But you can find your role in the system.
Yeah.
It kind of says, you know, you can be the staff.
It's okay.
You can be, you know, middle management.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it counters the narrative, and I guess moving a bit away from the movie, it counters the current narrative of, for instance, parenting or people who are growing up now who cannot handle disappointment because they've been told their entire lives, oh, you are special.
Which is an American thing.
American thing.
Yeah, but that is also something that we've adopted here. I mean, upper middle class parents have totally... embraced this concept now where everyone is special.
Yeah.
Everyone gets a star.
Yeah, even just by showing up. And
everyone gets a medal for just participating.
Yeah.
I mean, having taught in high school,
mm-hmm.
this was the philosophy that was being employed when we were teaching high school students. Everyone matters, everyone is special.
No,
and that's not the case, right? But the great thing here is you don't have to be
special.
Yep. You can just do the right thing,
mm-hmm.
which is also an amazing basic message.
Also, actually, probably the more ethically correct thing to do isn't to be, you have to be the best, but rather just given the circumstances, can you do the right thing?
Well, but then the movie itself kind of subverts that when it actually gives Emmett the master builder skills.
Yeah.
At the end.
Movie. Yeah.
But he gets through the whole thing. Without it, and I think the when we were talking about this, like, you can be the best, you can do all these things, but what he had there What you get in the film is you have him hanging out with Batman, who is the best. He's the best.
The Batman here is the worst. This Batman is the worst.
He is though. He's a terrible.
He's a terrible Batman.
He's a terrible Batman, but he's like the best builder and all that stuff.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he does all of those amazing things, and the crucial thing is when Emmett becomes a master builder at the end. It's not that he's drawing from his own personal what he wants, but what he does is he facilitates all of the other people working together.
Oh,
yeah, he facilitates the people building something, working in coordination, right? I mean, it's not so much that he comes with those powers, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the big thing is that towards the end, he comes up with a plan. And it's a plan that only he could come up with because
he's part of the system.
No, I'm talking about the end of the story.
When he gets his master,
when he gets back,
when he sees the parts and goes, I can see what you see.
And it only becomes possible because he went out of the box.
Yeah.
And he discovered what they was truly
outside,
were.
Yeah, what was outside the box. Quite literally, in this case. Yeah.
So let's talk about this because I think if we stop dancing around it, we can address it. So for the majority of this film, at least the first
two-thirds
of it, we operate in the Lego universe, which has multiple dimensions.
Yeah, right. It's multiple universes.
The city,
you've got
like the Wild West setting, and they're very familiar Lego settings, and they're very familiar children's play settings.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, but the great thing is the plot has all of this running, it's all of this movement, and it's essentially a chase. And then, just when you don't realize what's gonna happen, suddenly something just goes, and then this thing arrived, and then that totally changes the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I love this sequence where they're like, okay, we're gonna build a spaceship. How are we going to do that? Well, we need a hyperdrive. And then the Millennium Falcon shows up, and it just randomly pops up. Or they don't know where they're going to go, and then randomly something shows up, which is, it really reminded me of when I was a kid and I would play with toys, and I would bring the story to a certain point where I didn't know how to resolve it, and I would just deus ex machina it.
Yeah, except that here, literally, it is a deus ex machina, simply because these weird things that pop up when they need it, for us as the audience, it goes, why is this happening? It doesn't make any narrative continuity.
Yeah.
Until we follow Emmett out of the box.
Yeah, because for a long part of it, I mean, at the start, it's like, oh, this is bad. But then when they were consistently doing it, and consistently just deus ex machinaing things, I started thinking, okay, this is the logic of it, because it's running along the logic of a child's story, which made me feel like this movie was a lot more intelligent than your typical kiddie thing. And then there is the reveal that, well, it's that way because it is a child
actually playing the entire story.
Yeah.
Right? So,
but is he playing the story?
Yes. He's telling it.
Yeah,
he's telling the story, but then Emmett is also, you must remember that Emmett moves by himself
when he's
outside. So he's actually sentient in a way, and that they are just co-opting the narrative of the child to create their own stories.
And I think that's where the line becomes a bit blurry, because when we are introduced to the fact that it is an actual Lego set, and that somebody actually built all these sprawling,
The metropolis.
Yeah,
Middle Zealand.
Middle Zealand and the Wild West. Right? When we get there and we see that, these are actually real Lego sets in the basement of an adult, and the child is playing around with it and messing it up. Diba? What happens is really that it forces us to also see the narrative in a different way. When we say that Emmett co-opts the narrative, we're not sure if he moves because we want him to move. Are we the child or are we the dad? Because at the end of it, at the climax, when President Business and Emmett...
Lord Business.
I love the name.
Yeah. they face off. Mm-hmm. It's not a, we're going to blow you up. It's a, what would you say if you could talk? What would you say to him?
Which is also essentially that those two parents.
Yeah, the parent and the child. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Talking.
Now, what would you say if...
So is Emmett a surrogate for the child?
If you're going by that route, everyone in the story is a surrogate of the child.
And then the father is Lord Business.
Even Lord Business is a surrogate of the child.
Yeah, that's how the child imagines the father.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm going by the logic that while the child tells the story, the Legos co-opt the narrative of the child.
And the Legos start living their own story.
Then they start living their own stories.
Hmm.
So when Emmett falls out of the box, or falls out of the set, right, into the abyss, right, that happens within the story, but it's not the child's doing.
He accidentally falls off.
So this, so it's kind of like Toy Story where they're sentient apart from him.
Yeah.
But it's that
the child still has a master.
Yeah.
He has the master narrative, but then the mini narratives inside, it's the toys.
Yeah. Which is why I remember when the dad says at the end, now we have to let your sister play as well, so that it's fair.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then suddenly all these, it just steps up the crazy.
Were those Duplos?
Yeah, they were Duplos.
Yeah. No, there's so much. I mean, on this narrative level, it feels sloppy at the start because it's leading us towards this, and I think that's part of the brilliance is that it's so aware of the way that it's manipulating narrative and creating different levels of narrative, and I think it gives the viewer a lot of credit.
Yeah.
Like, I think you guys will follow, which is really important. And I'm thinking for, say, if it's a child that watches it, they might not get all those levels.
Of course not.
But they're getting these multiple kinds of stories. And I think it makes up for it with the jokes.
Mm-hmm.
I did have trouble, though, in the sense that I felt like this movie was on crack. Did you guys get that feeling? Yeah. Or?
I had trouble with the visuals more than anything.
We watched it in 3D.
It was 3D. The angle wasn't really that good.
I think
it's too busy sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially when they are shooting lasers at each other.
Because you get it as well, and you're like, oh my god, my eyes, I can't see.
There's things moving around, there's blocks that are blowing up, and then there's the lasers that are in block form that are
also moving.
So
I think that was more of the manner in which we watched it as well, and also because, like, personally, I'm not a big fan of 3D films.
Sure.
So to me, that's
here.
Always.
I have written many essays.
Yeah, like I've never seen a movie that was supposed to be essential in 3D, like.
Gravity, yo.
No, I was too scared to watch it in 3D, and we watched it in 2D. I think because of the way that it was done as an action film, towards the end when all the action was happening, but they still retained the Lego form, I think that was when things just got a bit visually too much.
I felt like the crack element, and that's what I'm just calling it right now. It happened in terms of the pacing and of the jokes. It's just like, everything is so fast, and they're just throwing so much in. It's like, and there's really no room to breathe in this film. That's not a complaint, really, but it's just like, it was tiring.
Really?
Or it could be tiring if you watch it a couple times. Like, it's playing with a really, really intelligent, precocious child, which you can do for a certain amount of time, but at a certain point, it gets a bit difficult to keep up with.
I think the idea of, you know, a bit being manic is, it's in terms of storytelling, you're right, it moves quite fast, but then also gives the movie replay value. And readers viewers will never see the same thing in in one scene when the good cop was being erased by Lord Business. In the background, there are these two minifigures were caught in the band-aid, right?
Yeah, they were still running around.
It was running around, and I didn't really notice that until Gabby said, look at the background. Like,
no, there's so many
There's so many things there.
Or even, like,
it's the replayability.
Yeah.
Sure.
And the director, I remember reading on IO9 when they did an interview with the directors. And incidentally, the directors were also the ones who did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and what's that?
21 Jump Street.
Our favorite, which we're announcing it now. We're going to do a 22 Jump Street episode.
Yeah.
Just because we need to.
Oh, yeah.
Need that in my life.
Diba? So, I mean, these are people who know, who are aware both of the animated, what they can do within an animated film and also in terms of comedy. And they were talking about that a lot of the sets that they built, or not built, they created on their computers, the in-jokes and the background stuff were also meant to be there. And a lot of it was just, they just told the animators that to run away with it. Yeah. So, like, for instance, in the Wild Wild West, when there was an explosion, where they were being driven by the pigs in the carriage, when there was an explosion, the pigs exploded into bacon. And I didn't realize that until I watched it, like, on YouTube, where, you know,
it explodes.
And then they just built a lot of layers into this world. And, like, if you look at the behind the scenes of this movie, and you should look at the behind the scenes of this movie, they interviewed the Lego characters. There was not a single human in all the behind the scenes.
Wow.
It's all animated.
I like how, I think we were asking each other that night when we watched it, if this were stop motion or if it were in 3D, because it really felt like it's something that you couldn't accomplish in stop motion.
Yeah.
But it looked like it felt so close to the beauty of the stop motion animation.
Yeah, it's actually all computer generated. They had to learn how to generate the blocks.
It's so good. I mean, I can't imagine like building it and working on it and just moving these things little by little.
Just doing the explosion in Lego blocks.
Yeah, or the water scenes.
Yeah, the
like
water.
Yeah, I
love that. It's Nick Offerman doing the
the pirate.
Yeah, and Green Lantern and Superman is Channing Tatum and
your Jonah favorite
Hill.
Actor
and
all
Jonah
time.
Hill. It's the
Channing Tatum
from 21 Jump Street.
Oh, so Jonah Hill was Green Lantern.
Yeah. And they're like, we're together inside the box. We're neighbors.
Okay, so let's just, for some fun, who's your favorite character, Gabby?
Mine would be Batman, because of his really goth soundtrack.
Yes, this amazing death metal, industrial kind of.
Yeah, but they also really liked Evan, because he was just so stupid.
Yeah.
It's rare though, isn't it? It's rare to have a character who is a bit dim.
But still likable.
Yeah.
And I feel this is a preview of Guardians of the Galaxy.
I also was getting that sense, man. I was feeling like,
this might be how
this is Star-Lord
plays Peter Quill.
And I would be totally okay with that, because that is very...
It feels like something James Gunn might do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, for me it was Emmett and Batman. What about you, Francis?
Oh, I really like the 80s space guy.
If only because
that was the first Lego set that I had.
Oh yeah, dude, totally.
And
I remember having
that. And then he goes, I finally can build a spaceship.
Yeah. Like, finally, the good dude can do
He's
what
just
he wants.
Like, every opportunity.
Spaceship!
No!
See? So I like that character. Of course, Batman is always...
Yeah.
I think,
by Will
I think,
Arnett.
I think this is, I mean... This proves that the only viable character in the DC universe now is Batman.
What about you, Carl?
Was my favorite, man. I like, just so that I can mention it because I loved it, I like it that William Shakespeare was in this.
Oh yeah, doing the worm.
And I love it that he was doing the worm. And there's absolutely no reason for him to be
except
there. Except that he can do the worm.
Uh-huh.
I do like the pirate.
Metal Beard.
Fun.
His name is
Metal
Beard.
Such a fun character that I wasn't expecting, and I don't know if it's making fun of You know, the whole Pirates of the Caribbean yeah. thing. I wish it were.
I don't think so.
But it's just this really straight up, verbose, over the top performance from Nick Offerman. I also do like the Vitruvius character.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So funny. Yep. He's so funny. And I love Lord Business. I love it because he's just so vicious and terrible. Speaking of, let's talk about these villains. Right, you've got Lord Business, and you've got Good Cop, Bad Cop.
Yep, played by Liam Neeson.
Yes. Okay, I think Good Cop, Bad Cop was a stroke of genius. I don't know, does this... Because it exists as a Lego yes, piece, yes. right? You spin it and it's happy and it's yes, sad, right?
Yeah.
And it then does. And then they made it a cop.
Yeah. So
that was just... I don't... what do you guys think?
I thought it was just... For something that's supposed to be just a secondary character, your cop character, your generic cop character, I thought they did a really good job of it, especially when he was being forced to be a bad cop. Uh-huh. Instead of being a good cop and his face gets erased. To me, that was like a moment of, no, why are you doing that? That's terrible.
Yeah, they hold him down.
Yeah, and Lord Business kidnaps his parents and then says, this is what I'm going to do to everyone.
And it's so funny because the parents are just like, oh, son, you're there. And then the parents are also just... And, police.
Yeah.
And they were both voiced by Liam Neeson.
Yeah, they were also voiced, the mom and the dad were also voiced by Liam Neeson.
So,
it's a hilarious scene where it's very like, suburban.
Yeah, except that it's right in the middle of the office.
And I also had that suburban set.
Yeah, I also had that suburban set. I also had the horse.
There in the garden, there's that little gag there.
Yeah. Where it's like,
I want you to stand there. No.
Not, there.
No. There.
Put
no,
your hand on his shoulder.
Okay, no. If that person moves, you're not supposed to move. And then it's just so reminiscent, right? When you're trying to explain to your parents how to do something.
Yeah.
It's like, no, wait. Just, the okay, there. But no, stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of gag, I really like the gag where good cop, bad cop, you know, kicks around the chair when he...
Yeah, he needs a chair when he loses his temper.
And in one instance, he's in a vehicle, I think.
Yeah, and somebody gives him a chair.
Yeah, and he tosses it out when the vehicle's on the move. So, you know, really, really funny character there. I mean, Lord Business was, you know, it's Will Ferrell, so...
Yeah.
Will Ferrell is, I was getting Mugatu flashbacks.
Yeah, except with the really high shoes again.
Yeah, it's so brilliant. And then he has his, like where all the weapons are, the quote-unquote weapons, and there's like a battery, and there's...
Yeah, the relics.
The relics.
The relics.
Yeah.
The relics of acetone.
Oh, acetone.
Band-aid.
And you're like, oh.
I think that's the great like foreshadow there, for when they reveal eventually that
Crazy
we are
blue,
working
yeah.
in the real world. Is that there? It's real world items that have fallen into
the Lego world.
The Lego set.
Yeah, and I also enjoy the fact that each of the characters weren't there just for gags as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like all
except for Green Lantern.
Except for Green Lantern.
Yep.
Just, Green Lantern.
And Michelangelo and Michelangelo.
I love it.
And also Gandalf and Double, they were sitting together and they were like...
And they're, who's who?
Yeah, so Gandalf, what? And they all look the same. So I think there was a lot of really good gags there with the Master Builders. And I'm glad that they used all the popular minifigs that they could use.
Right,
that
right. Yeah, because we were talking before about how we felt the sore need for some Marvel love in this because it's all DC.
It's Warner Brothers.
It's Warner Brothers.
So they could get the permits for that. But I'm glad that none of the the people who owned the property, none of them made any fuss about how their characters were treated.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, the Batman was hilarious.
Yeah.
And Millennium Falcon was really...
She was there. But
this was probably before Lucasfilms, you know,
sold to Disney, probably.
To Disney.
I don't know, man. That's been a while, though. Lucas and Disney has been...
Like 2 years.
Yeah, so...
This was probably been like 3 years or 4 years in the making,
I guess.
So.
Yeah, but even then, yeah, how they used Star Wars was also like just a quick glimpse, but it was still useful.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, none of the gags felt overused.
Yeah, yeah. That's just great. You don't feel like they're going back to the well too much. There's a lot of variety in the jokes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. It's all spectrums, like gags, puns.
There's visual gags.
Visual, yeah.
Pratfalls.
Yes. And I like
Pratfalls,
huh? They also have the train.
Yeah.
Right? So there's this... You know,
they're in the on white, the train, yeah.
Yeah, there's like a train sequence where they're on top of the train and the train tracks are falling and all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's like a... flying shootout, and there's like a break-in.
There's a montage of the break-in and what they're supposed to do with
like
each part.
Ocean's 11.
Yeah. Ocean's 11 sequence. So, and it's just very, very imaginative.
That's true. And it is, again, it's all the tropes of your typical Hollywood
action
summer action flick.
But when you say that, and I was thinking about how you were saying it's the Hollywood action flick, but the thing is that we've also seen all of these different tropes employed by other animated films.
That's true. That's
right?
True.
And so it's everything you expect from an animated film, but better. I mean, it's not the Pixar kind of subversive, really left field kind of storytelling. But if you go with the standard narratives, this is a subversion, but it also like showing us what can be done with that narrative if you add something new to it, or that meta-textual level.
But I think it works particularly well here because we're working with Lego.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like what Francis said earlier, the assumption is you're making a Lego film. Clearly, this is a cash cow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, clearly it's a brand. We want to sell it.
But there's two things that are really interesting here. One is... it doesn't come off like it's just selling you toys. In fact, it questions the way that you play with Lego and the way that Lego is sold now. And I want to bring up that Michael Chabon essay when we wind down.
Mm.
So it's that, it's whether this is just trying to sell you something. And, oh God, I lost my track on the other thing. Anyway.
And what was your other thing? Oh. Damn it, Carl.
Sorry, guys. Anyway, so sure, let's talk about the way that we play with Lego.
Because I was a big Lego geek and
There we go. I got it now. Sorry.
Okay, go.
And so one is it just selling you toys? And two is it's worrisome that it might just be playing on nostalgia.
Yeah.
Like it's just I played with Legos when I was a kid, so you know, they're gonna take my money because I wanna see a movie about it.
Yeah, but like going back to that.
Yeah.
And again, let me go back to the audience that was with us when we watched the advanced screening, was that there was a good number of kids, but you're right, there was also a good number of adults.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Lego now, at least like when you go to Build City or when you go to Toys R Us, Lego now is very different from the Lego that we used to play, where we had basic sets and then you could mix them together, or you just had a basic bunch of blocks and then it was up to you.
The mixing.
Yeah, the mixing. Now they're all branded.
Yes. Not so many of them are, and
it's
franchise tie and stuff.
And the funny thing is they've segregated boy Legos and girl Legos, which is why, and I want to go back to that for a bit, because Lego is one of those toys that used to be neutral gender.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You could play with it as a boy, you could play with it as a girl. There was never any branding as to, you know, these are the only Legos you can play. But now there is a very clear-cut Lego for girls. And it is marketed as Lego Girls. And it's pink and it's flowery.
I haven't seen those.
And that's it.
Because it's not getting marketed to me, I suppose.
Yeah, it's probably not getting marketed to you. But
do they like send you newsletters? Like?
No. If you go to a toy store, it's segregated. There is a Lego shelf in the girls section. And they're all for Lego Girls.
Perhaps.
So,
wow.
And then they sell... Yeah, because you guys are dudes. You don't notice this. Yay for Token Girl podcasts.
That's what we keep you around for.
Yeah, I noticed. and if you look at them, they're all like houses, pretty houses or gardens, whatever. Mm-hmm. Very domestic scenes. Whereas if you look at the Gaia Lego scenes, you have Ninjago and you have the Lord of the Rings and you have all the space of
Prince of Persia.
Yeah, Prince of Persia. Yeah,
Jake Gyllenhaal Lego. Too bad he didn't make it into the movie.
No, I don't think they would have let you. Can be the butt of jokes.
Hey, I like that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
We're gonna have to talk about that sometime.
Anyway. all right. But yeah, so I think that this movie does that too. Honestly, it genders the whole thing.
Because of that ending part with But I mean, Princess Unikitty was there and she was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's true. But you just have two girl characters. You have Princess Unikitty, who is an amalgam of...
Are we going to Bechdel test this?
No, yes.
And she had her own world there.
It's true.
But because it's a father-son thing, though.
Yeah, precisely. But it doesn't give credit to the fact that it's supposed to be a neutral gender toy.
I guess.
I think it's a problem with, how Lego has been marketed.
Yeah. Because...
these last few years. That It's always in sets, and that it restricts play.
Yeah, kaya.
And then this movie, though, I mean, it's very clearly directed to a boy.
Yeah, it's a boy audience, right? Yeah. Even Wildstyle, who was your token female lead, played by Elizabeth Max, she was there as the foil, as the lady foil. She was there, essentially as the girl that Emmett wins.
The loyal.
Yeah, the lady foil.
The loyal.
Right, and the thing is, and I think I speak as a girl who grew up playing Lego.
Right.
Without knowing all of these things, or without being aware of these things. When you talk to other girls now, I realize that I am an exception rather than a rule.
I think it's not just you and the gender thing. It's that Legos is a very, very middle class toy.
And that might be something also. They're very expensive, especially
here. They are
expensive. I mean, when I was a kid, most of my Legos actually came from the States.
Yeah.
They weren't locally available, and what Lego we could find here, they were like 2,000 pesos.
And early 1990s, that was the 80s, early 1990s, that's really expensive.
Yeah.
It's expensive now, 2,000 pesos, that's not cheap.
Yeah, but if you think about it, the bag growing up and having that kind of
toy. So I think amongst us, we are problematizing gendering of it, or problematizing whether this is nostalgia or whether we are being lured back into buying Lego sets. And I think the great irony here is the movie's telling you that you can play with Lego the way you want to play with it, but then they're coming out with Lego sets based on the movies.
It's
a great irony of that.
What is also good, though, is they're also coming out with the Lego sets where it's just the head.
Yeah.
Right? You get this gigantic minifig head, and it's just random blocks inside.
That's
the
basic set.
Perfect.
Yeah.
For kids, in terms of just pricing, right? It's not just like it's expensive, but sometimes it's double the price. If you check the price of the Lego online versus the price that you can get it here for retail, it's sometimes double.
Yeah,
it's just an
insane.
So there is that gap, and that's why there are a lot of knockoff Lego toys.
And I was talking about it, I was saying earlier, we're problematizing this about Lego, but I think for many viewers of this movie, this will be, the experience of Lego will be something new to them. I think that for us, we may problematize it. For them, we're opening up Lego to
a new audience.
A broader audience. Yeah. And I think it's always nice,
So is this the message that we want to bring out?
I don't think there should be a singular message, simply because this particular movie plays on so many levels.
Yeah,
it talks about, obviously, from a child's perspective, it's a new toy.
Yeah.
And obviously they are familiar with Lego. I know that I have young nephews and nieces who play with Lego, and they're kindergarten, first grade.
Yeah.
So they're already familiar with it.
My nephews don't know Lego, so see.
Precisely, and I think that's a class gap.
It's a class gap. It's a class gap. Yeah, man. I come from the lower class.
Yeah, it's like,
you know, the streets.
You know, we come from the hood, you and I. So my nephews and nieces, they kind of, they just play in the street with their slippers and their ratty old cans. So this film for them will be aspirational.
Yeah, but
maybe one day
I can play Legos.
Because the cost of a minifig is really, really
I know, it's crazy.
It's expensive.
And if you play with the branded Lego sets, that's even more cost prohibitive.
Like just a single minifig can cost you 500 pesos.
Yeah, and that's just one tiny person.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not even the thing you're assembling. I remember way back somebody gave me the Batman Lego set that I have, which is just Batman, the Joker, and two like little motorcycle things that maybe take 20 pieces, and it costs something like 1,500 pesos.
Yeah,
really expensive.
Incredibly expensive. I know. My Lord of the Rings set, which I just have a tiny one at home, which is maybe like 100 pieces, and it's just Gandalf and Frodo and Gandalf's horse.
So essentially minifigs.
Yeah, minifigs, and then the horse, and then you build the carriage. That's just a gift. And it costs something like $100 Singapore.
Oh, wow. So that's...
Yeah, and it comes in this teeny tiny box.
Jeez.
See, guys, I didn't even buy Lego anymore because we're so poor, so...
I'll buy you Lego.
I just used to play with cans, like stacking cans of sardines.
You would stack cans.
Of sardines. And lunch with me.
I'll buy you Lego when you're older.
Alright, speaking of buying Lego, if you could get one set, what would you get? Like right now?
Right now, I would like the big castle set from Lord of the Rings, Helm's Deep.
Oh, wow.
I would like the Simpsons. Insane.
Oh, the Simpsons one.
Cool, man. The Simpsons house. I would love that.
What would you get?
I would love that.
Ah, so... I'm so glad that the listeners cannot see what these two are doing, but they're kind of, I won't describe it, but,
because if you describe it, you would have to say we were fingering each other.
Yeah, we were fingering each other on the podcast.
Every time that this podcast winds down with this couple, it just goes wrong. I felt like it was so intelligent, and Francis takes pride in his ability to lower the discourse.
He does lower the discourse quite well. I think that's why.
Can I go answer now?
Yeah, sure, go.
I'm gonna try
what and, is your... Sorry, let's go back to your...
Raise the discourse.
Yeah, what is your aspirational Lego set?
Falling Water.
What's that?
The Frank Lloyd Wright? You know the Falling Water House? Because they have this...
They have a set for that?
Yeah, they have this series of great architectural works. And Falling Water is one of them. And so...
Jesus, I wonder how expensive that is.
I don't know. It's probably $100 at least. Mm. But, you know...
Well, I saw the Millennium Falcon once. I don't know how much
Jesus
that is.
Christ, that's like $16,000.
But I would like to build
that. The Batmobile is like $6,000 to $8,000.
I would like to build just the challenge of building the Millennium Falcon.
Oh man, you know, I got like a knockoff.
Oh, you know,
yeah, your starter,
Enterprise.
You know what I was gonna say? Because I was asking you. Remember when we were in line? I was asking you, did you put it together? And you said yes.
Yeah.
And I asked where you put it, and you said you put it on the floor. And I was gonna tell you, why don't you glue it together so you don't?
Yeah, before we went inside the movie, he was like,
"Craggle."
Yeah.
Craggle.
So, and then he was like. Oh, we're watching this.
This is a part of the movie. Oh.
For Christmas, right, I got
Creo.
I got a Creo. Which is, I think it's a Hasbro or something.
Yeah, it's a Hasbro brand.
It's not bad. It's, you know.
I've
it's essentially the same in terms of the kinds of pieces that you're working with. Mm. The size. The minifigs are a little weird.
Yeah, they look like squashed, you know.
Yeah. So I have like a squashed Kirk and Spock and stuff.
Did he kiss?
No, that's not exactly where I
think. They're squashed because they're doing it, so.
Yes.
Oh, man. Jesus. Yeah, but it's you can see the difference between whether it's a Lego or not in the
minifigs.
In the construction also, because the... the bridge part of the
Enterprise.
Of the Enterprise. when you put it onto the rest of it, it tips over and sometimes it falls off. And that I didn't really have that kind of problem when I was doing traditional Lego.
Yeah.
The construction was very solid. It's not a knock on it. I mean, I love the way that it looks. But there is something to be said about that.
Yeah, and I think Lego, and now they're coming out with actual Lego architectural sets for 3D modeling. And they're starting in Paris, oddly enough. And it's all just the white blocks. So they're just coming out with the white blocks of different sizes. And then you can use it to model, to build models of houses and other architectural items. And I think that tells us essentially that Lego, at least at this point in time, is not just, and like in the movie,
It's not just
nostalgia. People actually use it. It is a useful toy.
Yeah, and it's not just for playing around with, but also it is great to play around with.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah. Highly recommend this movie.
Yep.
And yes, multiple viewings.
Yeah, and if you can get a copy of the main the theme song, because all animated films have to have a theme song. So this one is entitled Everything Is Awesome, and it's in the movie, and it's all, you can also get it, it's on YouTube, and it's done by Tegan and Sarah, and then with the Lonely Island.
it must be said
that that song is about, you know, it's an innocuous song, right?
It's really an earworm.
It is. I love that they have this sequence where like 10 hours later and it's just the only song that's been played. and you get the sense, one is that it totally sounds like all of the cheesy dance songs that you hear, but two, it is actually better than all of those cheesy dance songs.
So,
which is again reflective of this film, that it takes what can, you know, be seen as mediocrity or the standard or the kind of thing that's being regularly pumped out as children's films, and it elevates it to something a lot more fun and a lot more interesting. Last notes for listeners?
Watch this movie and then send us Lego figurines for this podcast.
You know, it'd be awesome if somebody actually bothered to make Lego minifigs of us.
I would like a Lego minifig of myself, but it would be fat.
I think
all of the torsos are the same.
I know. Lego minifigs do not have waists.
They don't have knees either.
No, they don't.
That's not their thing.
No. Last words.
Yeah.
Darkness!
No parents!
We've been talking so much about the
the Batman theme.
We haven't talked about the Batman theme, which was amazing.
Yeah. It was amazing. It was the best thing
ever. Best song on that movie.
Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah.
It was
so funny.
You should really watch this.
Yes, it is a movie to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie rewards multiple viewings.
I
think the receipts are coming in just now. I don't know how successful the film is.
It is February, though. Not that high, I think.
Yeah.
But they made more than what was expected. They are going to recoup.
Well, that only means Guardians of the Galaxy might make money.
It just might, man, because I would totally want that. But again, in line with Guardians of the Galaxy making money and in line with all of this, my own thoughts are that I hope that more films like this get made. I hope that filmmakers take a risk.
Yeah, but I think this is like being in a bottle.
A second one like this. If they do a sequel, I don't think it'll be as good.
Yeah, sure. It's like,
but what I'm pointing at isn't so much that the way that the formulas that were done or the pacing or everything, but what I'm looking for is for people to take this kind of approach, that you don't have to have the typical story, but you can find new ways to tell it.
A typical story.
I mean, the subject matter, or rather the product. It just turned out that it could, you know,
do all these things.
You could do all these things with the product. I think it was the right filmmakers and then the right product that they
and then
were
the
playing,
right time
and the right time.
I think because we can tie it into 21 Jump Street and the idea that 21 Jump Street was just, you know, everybody expected it to be bad because it's an 80s cop show reboot, and cop shows. Cop buddy cop stuff is so tired.
It's been done every...
Reboots are so tired, and then you find this new way to find, like, energy and tell a different story with it.
Mm.
And I'm hoping that that can be done, I mean, across the board, people just thinking differently about it. Even if it feels like it's cashing in, maybe we can tell a new story.
I'm sure it can be done, I'm sure. I mean, I'm looking forward to the new Muppets movie, because the first one was so great. You know, the one with Jason
Segel.
Yeah, so perhaps, you know, we'll look, it doesn't have anything to do with the Lego movie, but, you know, if they get the same manic energy of the first Muppet movie, then perhaps, you know, this one can...
be a template rather than the lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Just like, not to replicate what is done within the film, but the thought process and the creative process that people are applied to.
I mean, that said, this movie has just earned a spot in my DVD collection.
In your hypothetical DVD
collection. I do have a DVD collection.
Hypothetical.
No, that's not.
This couple is fighting now. I don't know.
I have a DVD collection.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm giving you guys mine, whatever.
See?
Yay!
It'll be awesome. Or maybe something for the Blu-ray. This would be a movie that you would buy a Blu-ray player for.
If the extras were
as
awesome.
Good as the movie itself.
And I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in one of those interviews, they said that they had enough gags and joke material cut out to fill another 2 hours.
Yeah. So
it's pretty long.
Movie,
if they were working on it for like 2 years, 4 years, I'm sure some jokes would have, you know, fallen flat by the time that, you know, so
this
they had
out,
to change.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there are a lot of unused material.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Mm.
All right, awesome. So thank you for listening. This is the Lupin Culturati podcast. Thanks, Gabby. Thanks, Francis.
You're welcome.
Thanks again. And so that means we have to go now. I'm Carl Javier. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next episode.